Hey, ladies and gentlemen, this is the Mean Green Nation podcast, episode 33. And this one's another sad one because we lost to UAB in Birmingham, Alabama, which probably makes the whole thing even sadder, you know? With me, as always, Mr. Greg Godecker. And you're in College Station, right?
I am now in Cypress. I was in College Station last night.
So you're there for a wedding?
Yes, but now, you know, we're gonna talk about the game and everything, but I just want to let everybody know what a shitty day yesterday was. So, and good morning to you and to everybody out there in Mean Green Nation. I hope you have a better day today. So, let's start off with that first. But, all right, so I wake up at like 6:30 because I gotta go to work. And so, I had to work from 6:30 to 1 on some drill exercise that we did. And then I had to get ready, and then we had to drive 3 hours. Then I had to listen to the game on the internet on my phone, so it kept dropping out as I'm driving. And I'm already depressed that I can't watch the game. And then I'm listening to it, and we're playing really shitty, so I'm even getting more depressed. Then we get to the wedding, which I don't want to be at. And there's all these happy people around me, and I'm like, I don't want to be happy right now. I don't want to be here. And then A&M starts to lose and get blown out. So that's kind of funny to watch that because there's a bunch of Aggie fans there.
Yeah.
Then after the wedding, it ends like right at 11:30 when the A&M game is over, and we get stuck in the loser trail from College Station all the way back to Houston. So I'm stuck in all this traffic, and I'm ready to just run all these Aggies off the road. And so, you know, by the time we get here to Cypress, it's like 2 a.m. in the morning, and I go to bed, and I'm like, this day has just been shitty all over.
That's a lot. It's really similar to what happened to us. I mean, because I was angry there for a while as we went to, you know, we try to have a little watching party here in San Antonio, and I mean, it kind of worked out well. The place we chose, Wings Army, and I heard that it was okay. They had okay wings and then decent enough beer selection. And what I was kind of interested in was a place that wasn't super popular because, you know, there's some other games going on, the TCU Baylor. I didn't want to have to, like, deal with other fans. I didn't want to have to, like, get there 4 hours early to stake out my spot. So I was specifically looking for a place that kind of nobody knows about or, you know, isn't that popular. This place checked all those boxes, but the CW here in San Antonio, where Mean Green HQ, Mean Green Nation HQ is located, they decided to show the Georgia-Duke game. I guess that started at 11:30. I didn't even know. But at the scheduled broadcast time of North Texas and Alabama-Birmingham, we were watching the third quarter of Georgia Tech and Duke. So I was pretty pissed that was happening, while also being pissed that that we were turning the ball over every 5 seconds and going down 21-0 yet again.
It was just a horrible day yesterday.
I think the funniest thing, speaking of Aggies, that I saw was Bomani Jones' tweet this morning saying that, so if you leave an Aggie game early, do you go stand the rest of the game at your house? You know?
I don't know. It was funny at the wedding because, you know, I'm watching, you know, there's all these guys at the wedding and they're like, they're going out to watch the game and they come back in and they're just like shaking their head and, you know, it's funny to bask and, you know, they're despair too. And then I walk outside and the one dude, he's watching the game and he literally has like his Aggie towel in his hand while he's watching it on his phone. I'm like, oh my God.
So I think something's weird's going on because Mississippi is the top of the football world, the center of the football universe right now. I mean, Ole Miss and Mississippi State are winning everything, and North Texas is losing. I mean, I mostly care about the latter. So, what were you gonna say?
No, I was gonna say, you know, about our game. I had texted you early in the week. And I had just sat down and I watched a little bit of one of their games. And it was one of their games that they lost. And I was like, man, we're going to lose by double digits. And you were like, wow. And I didn't stick by, you know, my initial thought, and I should have.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that was the thing. So, I don't know. I don't know what we're basing all this on. I think I'm a little less positive this week than I was last week. And I think for obvious reasons. I don't think I'm overreacting, but I think there's some overreaction going on the message board. I saw what username Ben Gooding is kind of getting ridiculous on there. Talking about, like, firing all the coaches and whatever. I don't know. So let's just kind of start from the top. 56-21 was the final score in a game where we were, you know, underdogs by 6.5, which is about 7 points. You know, I expected to lose. I expected to maybe even lose by double digits, but not by the margin that we lost by. And a lot of that was because of Dejon Williams basically playing the most terrible football that we've seen since, like, week one. Maybe week two. Maybe the Louisiana Tech game. That's pretty terrible, too. He had three really bad turnovers. One, he's running with the ball, fumbled it, they picked it up, scooped and scored. Another pick six. It was a throw to the flats. The guy jumped the ball. He caught it. He intercepted it and ran it back. And then the worst one, which after which he was benched. And I don't know. There's some. I don't know if you got to see the play, like some highlights of that play or anything. But it was a play action call, and he couldn't get rid of the ball quickly. And he turned, and I guess to like avoid the onrushing defender. I like saying defensor. Defender there was going to hit him in the end zone, so I guess he was like, oh, I don't want to take a safety, so he threw it, but he threw it to the only defender that was, the only player who was a defender, out in about like 10 yards away from the line of scrimmage, and he caught it, kind of looked surprised, and was like, okay, and just walked into the end zone. It was awful. Then I tweeted that, and a lot of people were saying, well, you can't blame him because that was a play call. No, the best that, you know, you do it the best you can within, you know, the parameters that you have. And his parameters were that play call. I don't know if he can, if he's able to check out of a play or anything like that, but within the play...
There's no way he's able.
No, I don't think so. But so within that play, you make the best choice within the play. And I don't think throwing to the only UAB defender was the best choice. But whatever. I mean, it was a terrible game overall, and I still think Dejon Williams is the most talented player, talented quarterback that we have on the roster. But I think absolutely that Andrew McNulty might have a better chance of winning the job based on his play in garbage time, which pretty much ran from the second quarter on, and Dejon Williams' terrible first half.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to open the quarterback competition back up, I mean, the season is pretty much over. It's over. If you're going to do that, you're creating a joke of a program, and you're admitting that you're a failure as a head coach and an offensive coordinator, and everybody else on your staff on the offensive side of the ball is a failure, because all you're doing is just making your team worse. If we open up the quarterback competition and we have to split reps again, we're going to send a quarterback in there against Southern Miss who's still not prepared. So either you just stick with Dejon, who's your most talented guy, and you move forward, and you just say, you know, you don't say this publicly because Mac is too much, you know, of a headstrong guy, but you got to start building towards next year, because this year it's done. You got a defensive coordinator who's, you know, putting in his retirement, and then you got an offensive coordinator who can't really do stuff. And then you got a team out there who can't execute whatever the play call is anyways. So it's crap upon crap. But if you put McNulty in there next week, I mean, we're going to lose. It's not going to be fun to watch. And, I mean, has he earned it? I don't really know. I mean, it's garbage time against UAB.
Yeah.
It's depressing.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't know if we have to write this season off. I think a lot of things can happen. But we're 0-2, and we're really essentially 0-3 in the conference, because Louisiana Tech is 2-0. They lead the division, And you know, they beat us. So, you know, we had two hurdles to overcome.
Yeah, well, stop thinking about winning the division, because it's not going to happen. And the only thing that's going to happen is maybe get back to a bowl game. And there's crappy teams ahead of us, but you know what? We're a crappy team, too. So.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know. I don't like giving up on division, because it is, you know, it's not over till it's over. And, I mean, it certainly looks... Yeah, I'm saying, like, I don't. If Coach Mack says that to the dudes, let's not worry about the division, because, well, I mean, he probably should say that. We'll worry about the next game, but it's still possible. That's the silver lining here. That's how you have to motivate people somehow. You can't just say, well, it's all over, and then, you know, scrunch up the papers and throw them in the wastebasket. But I see your point.
Look, you know, UAB knew what we were going to do yesterday, and they knew. They've seen enough of Dejon to know that, you know, hey, this is what they're going to try and do with him, so we're going to prepare for that. And it's just, you know, Canales and offensive system and offensive coaches, they're not preparing him well enough to go out there and be successful. I mean, the kid didn't practice much in the summertime, so what were we expecting?
Well,
we've got three unprepared quarterbacks right now.
What do you make of, I think it's Carlos Harris's dad, what do you make of his assertion that...
I didn't get to see what he said.
Well, yeah, I'm going to tell you. I'm setting it up, guy. He says that basically, I mean, this is on the coaches, because they didn't start Dejon earlier. If he would have been in the summer, we would have been up more. I mean...
it's hard to... If you're a coach and the kid... isn't preparing himself, it's hard to say, well, he's still our most talented guy. We got to roll with him. Yeah. I mean, Greer didn't, and McNulty probably didn't look like, you know, total garbage in practice. You know, I'm sure they looked a little bit more competent than they did in the game. So you're like, okay, this kid over here, he's clearly not ready. We can't start him. We can't put him in there. And, I mean, if you're a coach, you're backed into that situation. So you have to make that call.
Yeah.
You have to say, I got to go with Greer because Dejon is just not there. And then Greer goes out and he mucks it up, and you get to the point where the season is, you know, almost in a loss. You know, it's almost over with. So you're like, let's throw the young kid in and see what happens. And you're hoping that magic happens and that he's this great performer. And, you know, luckily his first game is against Nickel State, you know, who couldn't stop a high school football team. And he looks like, you know, oh my God, you know, our season's back on track. And then, you know, the next time we go out against Indiana, and then he looks like a redshirt freshman. And then we go on the road to UAB, and he looks even worse than a redshirt freshman. I mean, he looked worse probably than he did in high school. But, look, he's going to make mistakes, and we know that. It's just when and how he makes those mistakes, you know, that determines a lot for Coach Mack. You know, he can't leave a kid out there who's going to consistently – turn the ball over, and, you know, he gave up 21 points yesterday.
Yeah. I'm trying to, you made a lot of different statements in there. I'm trying to figure out where I stand in all of them. No, that's fine. I agree, one, that you had to bench him. You have to bench him there because that was awful. And, you know, in the context of the game, you're trying to win this game. He was not the best quarterback for this game. Is he the best quarterback for, you know, Southern Miss? Maybe, maybe not. Is he the best quarterback for the rest of the season? Maybe, maybe not. I don't think you want to set in stone those things. I don't think any position should be, you know, so, like, infallible. Like, if Dejon Williams all of a sudden is terrible, then maybe he's not the best option going forward. Do I think that is the case? No. I think that he had a bad game. And, you know, in practice this week, in the film room, is where we'll decide, where, you know, the coaches will decide whether or not he's, you know, able to lead the team out, you know, to start the game against Southern Miss. And I think that's the way you do it. All right, so I do agree that Dejon Williams is the best quarterback, and I don't know how much Andrew McNulty did there. Leading the, you know, this is the same complaint made about the first quarterback change when Josh Greer was having a terrible first quarter, and then, you know, they're like, well, Dejon Williams looked great in the second half, and everybody was saying, well, I mean, that was against second, you know, the second stringers. What does that mean? I think it's different though. In that, Josh Greer was like nearly unable to lead the offense to scores. And same thing with Andrew McNulty. And they were turning the ball over, and also unable to lead the team to scores. Dejon Williams has turned the ball over, but he's also able to lead him down for scores. And I think that's a crucial, if subtle, difference. I mean, yeah, he. I don't think you start the guy. I mean, I'd rather take just hand the ball off in the first quarter for the whole game, against, turn the ball over three times, leading directly to scores. I'm cool with even one or two turnovers because, quarterback is such an important position that your inexperience means that you're going to turn the ball over once or twice, and it kind of comes with the territory. If you touch the ball every play, you increase the chances that you're going to make a mistake. So, I mean, I'm a little bit more lenient if, turnovers with quarterbacks.
They're just, when he started making those turnovers, it just, we were able to move the ball, running the ball, and it felt like sometimes you're trying to do too much with him after a turnover, and instead you should have just stuck to the running game. And maybe even if it was a three and out or something, maybe the fact that he had a couple series in a row where he didn't make a mistake, maybe that would have made him feel better, got his confidence up. Because I'm sure, on the flight back, he's a pretty quiet kid. I'm sure, he's thinking to himself, like, what am I doing here? Like, I'm sure he's questioning a lot of things in his mind right now. Like, I mean, are you literally going to put McNulty or Greer back in over me? Or, where do things sit? All of a sudden I go from being, the greatest thing since sliced bread to, being benched for Andrew McNulty. I mean, I'm sorry, no offense to McNulty and his family, but I mean, that's pretty sad.
I mean,
our
yeah.
system, and also, we put so much on the quarterback and on his shoulders to try and resurrect this season, but the guys around him aren't helping him either. I mean, the coaching staff and then the offensive line. We're supposed to have this great offensive line, and we got a mobile quarterback back there, and he's getting sacked 5 times in a game by UAB. I mean, UAB.
Yeah, that's like a talking point that I don't think that has been talked about is that under when Derek Thompson was quarterback, I think he got sacked like 6 times all year, one of those years or something like that. And it's not even that like Dejon Williams has like happy feet or is unwilling to pull the trigger. I mean, maybe he's too willing to pull the trigger sometimes throwing the ball. So yeah, I think the offensive line is getting beat a lot more often than they were last year, and that's a big thing. And the other part is the defense. The defense is, sorry, it's my dog shaking off. He's waking up right now. The other part is that like the that the defense has given up 76-yard plays. I think I kind of as a running joke in 2012, I was kind of just marking like the number of 50-yard touchdowns that we had allowed in a row, and I think it was like something like 6, 7 games. That's why I was like surprised when we didn't allow something like that. But I think we're kind of back to that. Tevin Coleman had like a 76-yard run last week, 74-yard run, and I think they had a 76-yard touchdown.
Yeah,
And
it
same thing this
wasn't
week.
really that UAB was running the ball against them. I mean, they were running okay, but still, it was, I mentioned in the breakdown, and I might have told you, but we didn't have any defensive backs that were fast enough to cover their wide receivers. There was no way. Even coming into the game, I was like, no, no way. Because every time I was sitting there and I heard the words from George, go play action, I was like, uh-oh, this is going to be a big play. Because I knew, I was just like, there's no way we can hang with them. And they ran past our guys all day long.
Yeah, I think again, somebody tweeted during the game, like, how do we always get beat by that route? And the reason is because they know, they see on film that we can't guard it, and so they just run it every week. I'm sure Southern Miss is looking at that and say, wow, Indiana did play action for a score. UAB did a play action for a score. Hey, let's do the same thing. What do we got in our play action toolkit here? Yeah, Cody Clements, 74-yard touchdown pass to Nelson. I don't know how much, I want to say that it's like a backbreaker, but yeah, they scored like immediately. It was like right after a turnover or something like that, I believe. I forget.
Yeah, I know, you know, the guys on the radio, George and Hank, you know, I'm sitting there listening, and they're like, well, it's 30, or it's 28-7, we're trying to climb back into the game, and I'm like, what the hell are you talking about? There's no way we're climbing back into this game, and it's not because we, you know, our offense can't score, it's because our defense can't stop them, so it wouldn't have mattered. I was like, we spotted them 21 points, we're not going to stop them, and we're probably not going to score enough.
Yeah, I mean, even if, you know, even if you took all 21 points back, we are still going to lose that game. We would have lost 35-21, and that's holding a lot of things equal, because I think UAB kind of took their foot off the gas late. All right, so a couple things I think we learned this week. A, the defense needs some work. They are struggling. B, Dejon Williams, he's a redshirt freshman, guys. And is there C? Antoine Jemerson is back to his old self a little bit, I think. He had like 104 yards and a score. He looked good. And I really wish that we had a more complete team around him so that we, you know, like it doesn't just get lost in the shuffle. Because nobody's going to care about his stats in a 56-21 blowout. But he had a good game. And he's had like two sneaky good games last couple weeks. And it's good to see because I'm an Antoine Jemerson fan. So,
and I think with him, it's a matter of the touches. Because I went back and I looked at it, and it's like, you know, in all his career games, when he's had 10 touches per game, or at least 10 touches, you know, receiving and running, he's got like now, you know, 900 yards rushing in those games.
Yeah.
But he's, you know, he needs touches to get going. And, you know, sometimes, like I mentioned in the one piece we did this week, you know, sometimes it looks like he's, you know, auditioning for Dancing with the Stars in the backfield, but, you know, he does things that are good, you know. When he gets in the open field, that's where you want him to dance, because he can really, you know, he just steps through tackles easily. You know, you just want to see him cut, get up the field, and then start dancing. Don't dance in the backfield. And when he does that, he's a really good runner, and he was running hard yesterday, so yeah, I mean, if there was one bright spot yesterday, he was it.
Yeah. Sorry, I probably sound really stuffy right now. Like, allergies hit me like a freight train on Friday. It's like, of all the times that, you know, I get off of work and I'm feeling good, it's the weekend, and then I start sniffling. What the hell? So, yeah, you know, you're speaking of touches in Antoine Jemerson. Some of that is his own doing, because, you know, I think I can remember a couple games where he started out his, like, second touch, he fumbles the ball. And, you know, any running back ever knows that if you fumble the ball in your second touch, you're probably not getting many more touches, if any, the rest of the game. And so sometimes he takes himself out of it, or he'll make a bad run where he should run north-south, and he ran east-west, and, you know, the coaches pulled him for another guy. Like, last year, there were, you know, you had Pegram, you had Brandon Byrd, so if you messed up, if you didn't make the most of your chances when you were given them, then you probably were sitting, because Brandon Byrd was, you know, he was one of the better running backs in North Texas history. So,
right,
yeah,
yeah. And there's still people in the backfield this year. You know, there's still Pegram's still there. You know, maybe we get Wilson back, and Evans, you know, he played pretty well, but again, in the spring game, we saw him fumble the ball, and yesterday I think he fumbled it too.
Yeah, he did. He did fumble the ball. I think we had 3 fumbles, and all were not recovered. I think that's, I'm looking at the stats right now.
Right.
Yeah.
That was one of the reasons I had picked us to win, you know, being a stupid idiot that I am. You know, I thought, UAB's, you know, turning it over a lot. You know, I'm expecting them to turn the ball over. That's one thing we do well. And then, lo and behold, it gets reversed in that game, and the floodgates just open.
Yeah, they did not turn the ball over, and that breaks their streak.
We decided to give them an early Christmas present, about 5 or 6 of them.
Hey, well, haven't seen you since 1995, UAB. How's about a turnover or 3? Yeah, so that, I mean, that was pretty awful. It reminds me, and I think you might know Ms. Kwoner. He wrote something on Mean Green Nation. It was like 8 weeks in the making. But he wrote something, and he was saying, like, he's talking about how often that he has to watch the game, like, on his phone or something. So he'll check it in the first quarter, and he was thinking, wow, there are a lot of times I check the game in the end of the first quarter or at halftime, and we're already down by like 14 plus. And so he was like, he was like flying somewhere. And I was like, you know what? That's interesting. Let me check that out. And so I looked it up, and it was like 66 times out of like the 140 games or whatever. Long story short, it's a lot. And we've already added like three or four games this year. It was like Texas, Louisiana Tech, and this one now. Or in Indiana. So there's four games already. Down by 14 or more at the end of the first quarter, or down by 14 at halftime. So, yeah, it's pretty terrible. I think you mentioned something about like, you know, like, wow, like we keep doing this, you know, blogging, talking about North Texas. And you read a stat like that, and you're like, wow, that, like, how do we follow this team again? Like, jeez.
Yeah, I mean, you start, you know, we're fans too. But, yeah. You know, I've put in a lot of time to do some of the things that we do for the website and, you know, for the fans out there. And, you know, when something like that happens, you know, like it did yesterday, you start to wonder, like, why am I spending my time doing this if, you know, this team is going to go out there and just look like, you know, like they crapped all over themselves. Yeah. You know, my boss was joking with me yesterday. He was like, because I wanted to get out of going to this wedding. I seriously did. Because I wanted to watch the game. And he was like, you should come down with a case of explosive diarrhea. Well, it turns out that the football team did, because they shit all over the field yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to argue with that. And, you know, this is not a knock on any of the players. I always got to, like, caveat, you know, any analysis of the team, because there's a lot of people that are like friends of the players or like family of the players. Nobody's knocking these dudes as like people. I don't wish a bad on them, but I mean, they lost 56-14, you know, or 56-21, you know, just reading the stats, guys.
Yeah, they lost 56-21 to UAB.
Yeah. So all right, so you say let's not do any more, you know, Conference USA standings talk. Dare we hope for a bowl game? I mean, you're talking about crappy teams. They got Southern Miss, Rice, FAU, UTEP. UTEP looks better than they did last year. FIU, who I saw play last night, and UTSA, which looks UTSA looks terrible still. But you know, I think, you know, last week I was saying, well, I think we can beat UTSA because UTSA looks bad and blah blah blah. If our defense continues to allow, you know, 70 plus yard touchdowns and Dejon Williams or any quarterback that we have is, you know, gifting TDs to the other team early in the game, I don't know if we could beat anybody. But that said, again, FIU and UTSA didn't look very good. And they're, like, both decimated by injury. So I have some hope still, but yeah.
I would not talk about a bowl game until we win another game. And then still, I wouldn't. Once we get to 5 wins, then we can maybe talk about a bowl game, or maybe 4. But until we get there, you know, we got to prove we can beat somebody else. I mean, we've beaten 2 really crappy teams, and then against some average teams, we've looked horrible. So I don't know. I mean, yes, you know, we're lucky that we're in, you know, a crappy division in Conference USA. And there's those opportunities there for us to win, you know, 4 more games and get to a bowl game. But, again, we've got to show that we can beat somebody. And it's good that the team, you know, they're coming to Abergee next week, and it's Southern Miss, and it's a team that, you know, we should beat. We're probably more talented than them. But, again, what do we do? I mean, what does the coaching staff do this week to get them prepared? So I think if you're a fan, just focus on one game at a time. And, you know, once we get to that step where we're close to a bowl game, then we'll start to talk about it. Until then, just hope for improvement.
Like, wonder if we can improve from week to week. I mean, that makes sense. It's hard to argue against that. Except that I'm not on the team. And so I can think about, like, 4 weeks from now. You know what I mean? I'm not – come game day, my thought process is not going to influence anything going on. So I have that luxury. So I'm going to worry about the other games. I'm worried about the ball games, Greg. You can't stop me.
Well, I'm not going to stop you. I'm just trying to be trying to be, like, realistic this year. I've tried to pick games and look at things, you know, not being a fan. And I've done pretty well in my predictions. And then I tried to be a fan for the UAB game. I was like, man, you know what? We're going to come out. We're going to play good. We're going to, you know, Mac, he's 14-6 after a loss, you know. I'm trying to talk all these stats, you know, to get myself built up. And then, you know, I had that fatal flaw where I didn't trust what you see on the field, and it came back to bite me in the ass.
Yeah, it sure did. How much do you make? Because, I read some of this on the message board, and that in and of itself is probably enough reason to not listen to anything that I say past this. Because message board talk after a loss, even after a win, but especially after a loss, is pretty terrible. There's a lot of overreacting going on. And, I don't know, some people are like, fire this guy, fire that guy. I mean, what are you thinking? Like, really, does anybody feel the hot seat right now? They're like, I know it's a rebuilding year, so how much does that get factored into the equation? But I don't know. But, like, Ben Gooding over here, who's, like, lead overreactor here. We'll give him the who's reacting most, overreacting most award. He says, hire an innovative offensive coordinator that has a background of some type of spread system. Canales must go. To that already, I'm just going to say, well, Mike Canales has, like, done spread offense stuff, you know, his whole career. So, I mean, I don't know. It just any old guy that does spread offense is not going to come in and do anything. And you can't just hire an innovative guy, you know. Like, is there any innovative guys out there? Just bring me one of them. It doesn't work that way. So, you know, it's much easier said than done. But that said, what do you rate Mike Canales' job as a recruiter, as a coordinator, as a QB coach this year?
This year, I'd probably give him a C minus. He's a good teacher, but he's not a great play caller. I would say there's times when he has those moments of excellence, and you're like, man, I like what he's doing. You know, he's a good guy and all, but boy, if anybody's job was on the hot seat, it might be him. And because he had the great offensive line, he had the, you know, the good running backs, and, you know, all he really needed to do was kind of develop a quarterback to just manage the games, and we thought we'd be okay, and he wasn't able to do that. Now, I don't know what Mac's track record is, you know, when he was at Iowa State for, you know, dismissing coaches, and so that would be something interesting to go back and look at. And see, like, hey, this guy was under the hot seat and he actually made a change. Because he needs to make changes, you know? Something needs to be done. If we continue to look this bad week in and week out, somebody has to go. Somebody's head has to roll. And it's not going to be him because, you know, he got the big contract extension. And look, you know, Squidaney's probably going to retire too at the end of the year. So where do we go? There's a lot of young kids out there with bright offensive minds, but then again, you bring in a new coach, you bring in a new system, and you're going to have to teach all over again. So we're going to struggle with that probably.
Yeah. I was reading some of the stats here. Oh, goodness. Somebody says, the love fest with Dejon Williams is nauseating. No one defended Greer when he threw less pick sixes against Texas, but we start threads defending DW when he performs like that against UAB. Again, here's the thing. Dejon Williams can move the ball. He's shown that he can move the ball with the team. Josh Greer, I don't know. I think the general consensus was that we were never going to be able to do anything beyond a three and out with him. And Andrew McNulty could kind of move the ball a little bit, but he was turning the ball over. I think you got to give the fact that touchdowns were being scored with Dejon Williams, you know, as that's the deciding factor. As far as Mike Canales, I don't know. He wasn't like, you know, he wasn't the first choice. He kind of got stuck with him. He, you know, he was like the interim coach, and there was some sentiment among the players that, you know, they wanted Mike Canales to be the head coach. So, you know, I don't know. I don't know. It's a weird situation, but it's
been.
Yeah,
I mean, with the offense under him, you know, they've been record breaking. You know, they put up some stats, which is, you know, kind of sad. Like, our records must have been pretty low.
Yeah, they are. They are really low. Yeah.
So, and, you know, everybody, you know, they tuned in, you know, and they get to see TCU and Baylor score 61 points and, you know, look awesome, and all these teams look awesome, and then they look at our team and they're like, man, why do we look so incompetent? So I get what, you know, people are saying. You know, they want that. They want to score points. They want to see points. They're like, well, if our defense is going to suck, we need to find somebody who's going to score some points. But it balances each other out because, look, TCU had the great defense for all those years. But now, look, they're giving up a ton of points a game, too, now because their offense is putting the defense on the field more. They're scoring quicker. And last year, our offense did a great job at, you know, possessing the ball, not turning it over, you know, having those long drives, and it kept our defense off the field, too. So it looked, you know, they worked with each other, balanced out. And this year, you know, our offense and our defense, they balance each other out. They both suck.
in modern-day college football, nobody's going to be, you know, those 2000 Baltimore Ravens where you shut everybody down and hold everybody to like 0 or 3 points. So I don't expect that. I mean, Alabama's not even, you know, as good as everybody thinks they are. You know, they allow a lot of points. Yeah, so, you know, you need a team that can create turnovers, that can, you know, get stops occasionally, you know, and that basically doesn't allow 76-yard touchdowns. And again, some of these other offenses that are scoring a lot of points, they are, like, elite. They are, like, leading the line of, you know, college football offense. And Art Briles and Chip Kelly's Oregon teams, I mean, they're kind of injured now, and they're not so good. Those are those teams, you know, and that's almost a different level than Conference USA scoring all the time. So I think you can be a little bit more demanding of the defense maybe at this level. I don't know. I think that's my go ahead.
It also goes back to recruiting. You know, we're not getting those kids that would allow us to have an explosive offense right now. We're not getting those athletes that can run all over the field for some reason. UNT, they struggle to recruit and all that. You know, everybody's talked about it, but we're not getting those type of athletes that, you know, make our offense dynamic. So if we're going to go hire some coordinator, you know, to do that, is he going to even have the pieces or be able to get the pieces to North Texas to run that type of offense?
Well, I mean, you know, you said also, like, being in the season, we have playmakers on offense. I mean, we got a couple of freshman receivers that are redshirting right now that look to be explosive. They have some speed. Carlos Harris has some speed. Darvin Kizzy has a lot of speed and explosiveness. Antoine Jimerson can take it to the house. Pegram can be, he's a good running back. He can take it to the house also. He probably can't make everybody miss, but I mean, he's a good running back. He was good enough to be a Big Ten running back. I think if the offensive line was playing at the level that we thought they'd play at, and the quarterback didn't have to run for his life all the time, maybe this offense would be a little bit more explosive. But I mean, overall, outside of the turnovers, I'm not really complaining about the offense. You know, in the Dejon Williams, you know, 3 games he's played, one was against Nichols, again, glorified scrimmage. One was against Indiana, you know, and outside the turnovers, I think they did some good things. But so, I don't know. I mean, I'm really more disappointed in the defense. I think they have regressed since, I think somebody pointed out, the Louisiana Tech game after the first quarter.
Yeah, well, that was Billy.
Yeah. Yeah, and but the thing is that they've been put in awkward positions where they have to go out there and defend, you know, and play, and they're already down 21 points. I mean, that's what happened last week. We're down 21 points in like this, you know, in like 2 seconds. This week, same thing. You know, I don't know how much the defense could have. I don't know. It's a bad position to be in. It's kind of like the opposite of last year where the offense didn't do anything so much. They kind of took what was given, and the defense was spotting the offense points, you know, pick six. And so now the offense is playing with like a 14-point lead or 10-point lead. And so any points they score is gravy, and it puts more pressure on the opponent. This year,
yeah, they're both hurting each other because the offense realizes that the defense can't stop anybody sometimes, so they feel like they got to put up a ton of points. But then they make mistakes, and then the defense is like, well, we got to stop everybody because our offense is going to make a bunch of mistakes and put us in awkward positions, and then they give up big plays. So you know, they're not working well together. It's just one big suck fest out on the field.
Yeah, and that's why it's hard for me to like judge or critique the offensive play calling in certain situations. I know some people are like, "Why, we're down 21. What are we doing? Running the ball into the line." Well, I mean, that's our offense. That's kind of part of our overall philosophy, is to control the ball, control the clock, make good decisions, and then play field position, play smart football. But when one unit is not playing, so what do you do in that situation? Do you just open it up? Do you go five wide and call Da Bomb from NFL Blitz 2000, right? You can't really do that. I totally stole that joke from a guy who went to the UTSA game with me. But yeah, I mean, you know, what do you do in that situation? Do you stick to your philosophy, which helps your overall program in the long run? Or do you just scrap everything and say, well, we're down some scores, so now we're going to just chunk it deep. Everybody go long. So, yeah. You know, I have some sympathy for the play callers in that situation.
We can't just keep hitting the restart button, you know. It seems like we have to do that every week with, you know, some with the defense or the offense. We got to restart over, you know. We got to do something different this week, or we got to change something. And you know what? Just stick to what you were and just keep moving forward. You know what? We got Dejan. He's a great athletic quarterback or whatever, and that's awesome. Just keep running the football. Keep doing what you were doing, what you thought you were going to do coming into the year. Because if you get away from that stuff, you change. Look, we brought in Dejan, our quarterback, and then we had to change pretty much our offense to do something different in the middle of the season. That's tough to do. That's tough to do with a redshirt freshman. And we were all expecting, you know, it was just going to be a miracle that happened, and it didn't, and they're struggling. Well, I mean, if you practice all year during the summer to do specific things, and now you're doing different things, I mean, that's got to be hard for a player to pick up on.
Yeah, I mean, I think, but it's mostly the offense. I don't know. I mean, I see what you're saying, but I don't really see, outside of the turnovers, where the offense has been poor. I mean, they scored points, they've moved the ball, and they've moved the ball early on when it matters, you know? So I'm not so much down on the offense as I am on the turnovers. I mean, obviously, again, if we can, how do we score points at the rate we've been scoring? Because, you know, even 21, 24 points is enough to win or at least be close in a game. How do we score points like that while not turning the ball over? That's my question.
Right.
Like, how do we get to play some Dejan when, you know, how do we get touchdown passes from him, you know, while also taking out the rolling out and holding the ball loose and getting, you know, strip sacked?
Yeah, and then it probably comes to, you know, throwing the ball just a little bit less. He's a talented passer, but maybe we don't need to throw it as much. Maybe we need to focus more on running it and, you know, doing those things, being a physical running team, what we thought we were.
Yeah.
Maybe if we do that and we only throw it, you know, within maybe like 20 times a game, you know, you pick and choose your spots. You take deep shots down the field, you know, you do things that, you know, maybe he's comfortable with. You know, it's okay to be conservative with him as a redshirt freshman.
Yeah.
It's okay to have a little bit of conservative play calling. You know, when he got in there, we just like completely, you know, went wide open. We're five wide. We're doing all this stuff. Maybe it's too much for him to handle right now. Maybe scale it back, give him a few passes, you know, try and make him successful. If he's our best choice, make him be successful. Give him plays that he can, you know, execute on the field.
Yeah, well, I mean, I see it. Everything that you said makes sense. I mean, you said a lot of the same stuff about Josh Greer, and it applies. I mean, if you have an inexperienced dude, you're not going to say, all right, here are the reins to the offense, you know, do with them what you will, you know, our new Peyton Manning. Yeah, so I think they've done a decent enough job doing that. I think some people complain about, like, play calling a right when they're talking about, like, a play-action call from the 3-yard line. Maybe that's not so smart. Maybe you just run the ball at that point. So that kind of stuff, yeah, I mean, it's those plays there that really kind of get you. Some of the bad reads he's made when he, you know, like last week when he rolled right and tried to force it in there. Again, that's a young guy thing. When he's rolling and trying to make a play and get strip sacked, again, that's a young guy thing. When he did that terrible pass to avoid the sack in the end zone, That's bad. I don't care how young or old you are. That's just bad. And whatever it was, whether he was like panicking or whether he saw something, you know, you got to know the situation at that point, and that's an experience thing. The other one, you know, when he threw the ball short in the flat, that's again, it's a reading stuff there, and you can make the argument that that's a conservative play. He's throwing to the flats, this, that, you know. So I think all of them can be explained. And none of them come from like a bad place, which I think is like panicking. So that's good. But, you know, like you said, I mean, if he has enough confidence to make these throws on the road, well, I mean, it's not even a hostile crowd because there was like nobody there. It was like hot, unless you think like the glare off the empty bleachers was hostile, because, you know, that's pretty much it. There was nobody there. And that was like homecoming. It's like, God. Yeah. Anyway, so. Yeah, I don't know. I'm a little bit more forgiving of Josh Greer's mistakes than I was of these other guys. Like Andrew McNulty, he's been in the system for like 3 or 4 years, so you can be a little bit more tough on him. Josh Greer's young, but he looked panicky. So that's why I'm not like, let's go back to Josh Greer, because no, he looked like he was panicking. I mean, let's wait to the spring game. Let's open up the competition then and see if he can handle some things, because, yeah, like you said, you know, yo-yoing the quarterbacks is, I don't know. It's a sign to everybody that you've kind of given up, or you don't know what you're doing.
Yeah. It just makes your quarterback less prepared.
Yeah.
You know, our quarterback, whoever it's going to be, he needs all the reps he can get. He needs reps. If it's Dejon Williams, he needs reps. He needs to continue to grow and to learn. And if you're not going to give it to him and you're going to split it during the week, you're just going to continue to see mistakes made.
Yeah, you know, so... I'm trying to look it up here, and I don't know if I can. Didn't Middle Tennessee and Southern Miss both start like freshman guys last year, and it was like against us, right? Austin Grammer and the other guy.
Middle started Logan Kilgore against us, and he was doing okay and throwing the football. And then they pulled him out and they put Austin Grammer. And that, you remember, that was a big discussion point last year in that game. Like, why the hell did they do that? But, yeah, then they put Grammer in. I don't know. Was he a freshman last year?
I think he was a freshman. I'm looking it up right now. Yeah.
And Southern missed it, yes. They pulled their reins off, or red shirt off of, that they were going to have for Nick Mullins, who was a talented kid. And, you know, they stuck him under fire. And, you know, he made mistakes and he did things. But then he grew as the season went along. And, yeah. You know. I mean, yeah. There's a couple ways to look at it. If you go to McNulty and you try and be the conservative route, I guess you're hoping and praying, or you still think you can get to a bowl game. And if you stick with Dejon, maybe you're thinking more terms of the future.
Yeah. And so I guess what I'm saying is, and I think you kind of mentioned, you alluded to this earlier, I think that's the way you go. And that's the reasoning for sticking with Dejon versus going back to Josh Greer. Because, again, Josh Greer... he didn't really look ready to handle everything. And when he made a mistake, he looked shook. And you don't want that from your quarterback. Dejon Williams is making similar mistakes now. You know, like young guy mistakes. And he doesn't look like, you know, like, oh shit. He doesn't have oh shit face. And that says a lot. That's, you know, it's like a small thing, but it's a huge thing. And so I think, hey, I mean, you know, like you said, there's no reason to talk about winning the conference right now. So you might as well just roll them out there and, you know, learn the game. And he'll be that much better for it next year. And I think Nick Mullins, because he looked pretty awful for Southern Miss last year. And so did Austin Grammer. And I think Middle Tennessee was kind of wondering what the hell. But he looks a lot better now. You know, they look like they have a solid quarterback there. So you kind of win. You win that way. You win for the future. It sucks.
Yeah, I mean,
but,
I think it would really benefit Dejon if everybody got behind him this week. You know, the team, the coaches, and said, "Look, you're our best chance. You know, to win, to move the football. You know, we believe in you. We believe that you're better than that you played. Go out there and prove us right." You know, that type of attitude with him. I think he'd really like respond to something like that.
Yeah.
That, you know, and maybe he would put it all together, you know.
So do you have a prediction for next week's Battle of the West Basement, North Texas and Southern Miss?
Cup prediction. The Southern Miss, they played yesterday, right?
I think they did. Did they play yesterday? Yeah, they did not play yesterday.
Okay. I would still, at this point, at the state that we're in and the way we're playing, before I watch any Southern Miss and look at any statistics, I'd say that Southern Miss would beat us by a touchdown. And that's hard to say because we've been either blown out or we win by a lot. So, I don't know, man. It's tough to say right now. So, I'm going to take Southern Miss by 21 points.
I mean, you know, Southern Miss hasn't really shown anything. You know, like, I think you could say that we've shown that we're very poor on the road. That's another thing. I was going to talk about Coach Mack that way, how we play on the road. I know we mentioned it last week on last week's podcast, which you can find on iTunes, guys. I mean, if you're wondering, like, how to listen to these things, you can listen to them, you know, like, live on this thing. You click on podcast on the right side there, and listen to all the old episodes. Or you could subscribe on iTunes, and then, you know, once we do this and I post it, it'll go up, and you can listen, you know, at your cubicle or whatnot. But yeah, I said this last week. I mean, you know, like, Dan McCartney was kind of, I don't want to say he's like snarky, but he was at the press conference, and, you know, he was like, yeah, our record on the road isn't so good, but some of that's because we've played some really good teams like LSU and Alabama and whatnot. And I was thinking, went back and looked at it. I mean, last year we lost to Tulane and at Ohio, and I don't know about you, man, but I don't confuse them for Alabama or LSU. You know what I mean?
No, but you could confuse Alabama for Alabama Birmingham, though. So, I mean, maybe he could lump that one in there. But, yeah, at some point, and you're a coach and you see how your team has struggled mightily on the road under you, don't you go back and you assess what you do? Like, you know, when you leave or your walkthroughs in the morning or something, you change something up, you know, even if it's, you know, superficial. Still, maybe that makes a difference to the players. You know, they think, oh, we're doing something different. So maybe they come out and they play a little bit better. I don't know. Change something. Stop getting your ass blown out on the road and looking like shit.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a running theme there for the good guys, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, this year already, lost at Texas, lost at Indiana, lost at UAB. Texas and Indiana, maybe you could say those are definite, but I mean, even if we lost at UAB, that would have been fine. But getting our asses handed to us, ugh.
Yeah, I mean, it's the fact that we lost and we didn't look like a competent football team.
Yeah. We got Rice coming up. We could play at Rice, at UTEP, at UTSA the rest of the way. It's a big, scary thing there. Hey, so basketball starting up soon. I know you gave your big basketball rant last week. You still feel the same way?
I don't know. I was not prepared this morning to talk about basketball. I'm just going to be honest with people. I'm sorry. It's just, yeah, the football is such a depressing state, so I don't want to talk about even more depressing than the basketball team. But hey, you never know. If our football team struggled, maybe our basketball team's going to come out and win some games this year.
Yeah. They got a
group of a lot of different people, so maybe go out there, you know, give them a chance, watch a few games, and then decide after that.
By the way, Calvin Miner tweeted, season's not over. Mean Green will show some perseverance and grit this week and return back to winning.
So, good. I mean, you hope he's not the only person that believes that, you know.
Yeah.
You hope he's not the only player or coach, but, I mean, what does the offense think, or, you know, what do the players think if they go to a different quarterback or they see that, or what happens if Southern Miss next week jumps out to an early lead again?
Yeah.
You know, does a team lay down, you know? You hope that you get back at home and you've just been crushed twice on the road, and you hope that our guys come out, they play aggressive, and they just play with nothing to lose, because you got nothing to lose at this point.
I think maybe the people you'd lose are like the message board people. I mean, you know, I'm occasionally on the message board, you know. But, you know, those people that are like, oh, God, I can't support this team. I'm never coming back. Yeah, I'm never getting my season tickets. I think that's really overreacted. I mean, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you just coach like you have nothing to lose, play like you have nothing to lose, be aggressive. You know, the way that Indiana came out and played against us, you know, onside kicks and doing all kinds of things and going for it on fourth down, do that. Yeah. You know, come out and play with some swagger. You know, we need to see that.
Speaking of Indiana, they played they lost to Iowa. Iowa just came and they looked really good, but Tevin Coleman had another like 80-yard run or something like that, and also, you know, broke 100 yards. So we don't have to feel bad.
He reminds me of DeMarco Murray.
So, you know, see, I said something like Tevin Coleman might be the best running back in the country outside of Todd Gurley. But now that Todd Gurley's probably not going to play any more college football, maybe Tevin Coleman's best running back. Yeah, so there you go. Maybe I was even more right than I thought.
I don't know. The Melvin Gordon, he's pretty good too.
The Wisconsin guy?
Yeah, boy, you know, Phil Steele, he had a stat that he tweeted out that before this week's game, he was averaging 54 yards a carry on the first carry of the second half.
Well, look, Wisconsin always produces a dude that can run all day, every day, right? Like Montre Ball and the other dude that broke Ricky Williams' record, what's his name?
Ron Dane,
there you go. And, you know, they really pan out in the NFL. So, I mean, you know, not that the NFL is like the true barometer of football greatness, but I'm just saying that maybe it's a more of a product of Wisconsin's offense and dedication to the run game. And it just whoever's toting the ball that day.
If you watch Melvin Gordon run, he's a good running back. He's not like the other guys. Melvin Gordon is a legit NFL running back. I'll stand by that. I'll endorse that message.
Remember, guys, this is a Browns fan. He watches Browns football, so his opinion of what constitutes an NFL player may be a bit skewed.
Yeah, I got the Browns to look forward to today again. You know, last week I was doubting it at halftime, but I stuck with it. I kept watching the game, and a miracle happened. And so this week I'm hoping, I'm praying, that if there was ever a time when I could get that win,
it
was against the Steelers.
Yeah, I mean, you know, as a Cowboys fan, taking on Seattle today, Seattle's like an 8.5-point favorite. That's a lot. It's a big line there for NFL. You know, this is like, you know, the Cowboys are doing well. You know, they got a good record, 4-1, winning some games. DeMarco Murray's running on everyone. I think probably this is the week where everything, you know, they kind of get smacked to reality, because I don't see them beating Seattle. Seattle's too good.
Right.
So, yeah, we'll see.
See what happens.
Is it in Seattle? Is it the game? I think it is. Yeah,
it's in Seattle. I don't know. I don't pay attention to the Cowboys, you know. Trust I live them, in right? Dallas, but I don't pay attention to them.
Yeah. It's kind of hard not to pay attention to them. They're like forced in your face all the time. I think my uncle's going to the Cowboys game, like against the Giants in a couple weeks. I don't know. Sorry, it popped into my head. Hey, good news. Speaking of a good team, you know, we don't know if we can look forward to basketball, but we can definitely look forward to the soccer team, which is undefeated in conference play and has not allowed a goal. And they play today at Rice, so that's a big
awesome one.
Yeah, like I said, I saw them last week. I kind of said, "Yeah, I'm going to the soccer game today." I saw them last week take on UTSA. It was hot, and I think I wrote a little post about it. And, like, nobody reads it because it's soccer, but I mean, it was fun. The weirdest thing, I don't know this about Conference USA level women's soccer, so maybe somebody out there that is more familiar can help me out here. But it was weird. So, like, I went and got an ice cream at halftime because it was, like, noon, and it was hot, and I needed to cool down. And so I'm eating my ice cream, and then I was finishing it, and I was going to throw it away. I'm looking for a trash can. There I am under the bleachers at UTSA's Park West Complex. And, you know, so I walk over to a trash can, and I see to my right is the women's soccer team. They're, like, huddling there at halftime. It's, like, under the bleachers. And, yeah, UTSA's soccer team went across the field and, like, sat down in a little circle. And I don't know how common that is. I guess I didn't realize it. They don't have locker rooms there at UTSA's Park West Complex. Now, I might be wrong, but I think we have locker rooms at the Mean Green Village. in which case we have the better facilities. How common is that? Like, do these places not have locker rooms for these players? I don't know.
Maybe it's like, you know, playing soccer and, like, when you're a little kid.
Yeah.
You just go sit off to the side of the field and they don't have those things.
Yeah, see, and that makes sense. You know, you're a kid. Nobody cares about you when you're a kid, right? You just, you know, whatever. But these are, you know, D1 soccer players. So, you know, we can't get them a locker room. Can nobody get them a locker room? Somebody needs to donate some locker rooms to these girls.
They can't get a portable shed or something out there that they could put AC in, you know, give them some place to cool down.
Yeah, something, you know, maybe a tent, like a personal tent. They got a little ice, you know, ice cubes in there or something like that. Not just under the bleachers, man. Cause, you know,
have the orange slices waiting for them at halftime.
You know, I could have used some orange slices, man. It was hot. And there were, like, dragonflies flying in my face. Yeah, it was a good time. They beat them pretty bad. I mean, they controlled the game. Scored some goals. Like, UTSA had a lot more shots on goal, but they never really threatened. They didn't look that good. And they had a diving specialist. Her name was Happy, and then I forget how to pronounce her last name. I was practicing it for this podcast, and it completely slipped my mind. Too many beers yesterday. But she was a diving specialist, and so, like, our side was kind of complaining, like, oh, she's diving. And then so UTSA kind of got angry that we were getting angry, and so they would overreact to our calls, and they're like, hey, come on, ref. And their coach, so John Hedlund, he got a red card against UTEP that previous Friday, so he wasn't there. And so the two coaches, assistant coaches for the women's soccer team, our team, were coaching, doing the coaching. And so they were complaining to the ref, like, hey, come on, ref, that was a yellow. And so then UTSA's coach, whose name I don't know, he was like, well, we're not the team that ref whose coach got sent off last week, and their fans were kind of, it was an interesting Sunday. So there you go. Who knows what's going to happen against Rice? The players, I think Marshall Davis tweeted, I think Rachel Holden tweeted that they were kind of excited about this game. I think they're getting hyped for the Rice game. Maybe it's like a soccer rivalry. I don't know. It's going to be on Owl Vision in case you want to watch. There you go.
Sounds like a plan.
There you go. You people out there. Yeah, anything else you wanna toss in as we wrap this one up?
No, I'm good. Hope next week is better. You know, if you don't go out to the game, don't give them another chance. I don't blame you, but for our sake, I hope that next Sunday when we discuss things, it's a much more positive tone.
Yeah, I think so. I think we'll do well against Southern Miss. I think here's my bold predictions a week away. Dejon Williams starts. He throws for 3 touchdowns, 1 interception. We win by 2 scores. There you go. There you go.
All right. That's positivity.
Yeah. It's just, again, Sunday morning, I have my orange juice, I have my coffee. It's hard not to be positive about things, you know? There you go.
I went to bed at, like, 2:30 last night, got up to do this with you, so I'm not feeling real positive.
I mean, I went to bed at 2:30 also, and I'm feeling real positive, you know. But then again, I didn't have to endure a wedding. I was at a football game all day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I watched our game, and then I went to go see the UTSA FIU game. By the way, that was an awful, awful game to watch in person. Like, half the stands were bored. Yeah. One guy didn't know the rules of football. It was all kinds of terrible. But it made some good jokes. So there you go. That's how you win. You make good jokes. All right, guys. You can get us on Twitter. I'm Mean Green Nation on Twitter. Greg is MGN_breakdown. You can email the podcast if you got, you know, HSOs and you're like, dudes, you guys don't know nothing about nothing. Here's why Josh Greer should start. Well, you'd send that email to podcast@meangreennation.com. You can subscribe on iTunes. You can subscribe via your favorite podcast, like Catcher. I don't know if you have an Android or something like that, or you just disdain iTunes. You can do that too. There's a link on this post, but if not, click on the site. It says podcast. Click there. It should give you everything you need. If you can't figure it out there, get in contact with me. There's multiple ways to do it. There's a message board. You can sign up and a lot of ways to get in contact with me, and Greg, for that matter. And, you know, ask your questions there, and we'll answer them. We'll get you all squared away. and all that other good stuff. Outside of that, I think we're done. Oh yeah, you know what? Listen to my other podcast, Deranged Penguin podcast, Deranged Penguin with a W.com. It's for funs. It's for funsies. Otherwise, I don't talk about that podcast everywhere, and I need to. More people need to listen to that one because it's fun. Anyway, I think that's it. Watch the Browns, I guess. Watch the soccer team. Yeah, is that it?
Yep. Great. And the last thing, appreciate everybody who checks in every week and reads the breakdown. Appreciate you guys.
Yeah, and hey, we had some live listeners, and you guys didn't contact us while we're talking here, but hey, we appreciate you listening live.
Yeah, and we hope everybody has a great Sunday and a great week, and stay safe and healthy out there.
Sunday. All right, we're done.